Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Looks like you need a vacation. Enter the 5-Hour Energy Where Will the Tide Take You sweepstakes. You could win a $10,000 dream beach vacation. Imagine jet setting off to a tropical paradise, having fun in the sun, or diving at a gorgeous reef. It's up to you. No purchase necessary. Go to 5hetide.com for official rules and to enter. That's 5hetide.com. Enter today. Ends June 30th, 2024.
You may be into punk rock, soft rock, or classic rock, R&B, hip-hop, or house, country, techno, or techno country. But no matter what kind of music you listen to, here's something else you should hear. Please consider getting vaccinated. Talk to your pharmacist today about Comirnaty, COVID-19 vaccine mRNA. This message brought to you by BioNTech and Pfizer.
Welcome back to the Cosmology and Science Podcast. I am Richard and I'm your host today. And in this episode, we're going to have the review of the third book from Stephen C. Meyer, which is called The Return of the God Hypothesis. So we've been postponing this a little bit because we have been digesting and thinking about the book and looking through it several times. And it's a very hard book to review in many ways because the scope is so big. It tries to pull together so many different areas, both from science, but also then from theology and from philosophy. And it's both complicated to evaluate, to read in places, and also to create kind of a coherent review because it depends so much on who is reading it. So, but we're going to say just a few of our immediate thoughts is that the work of Stephen Meyer is super interesting as a starting point for new research and to just reevaluate some of the things that is often seen as kind of settled and sorted science, which has, especially in the case of cell biology and kind of the nanomachinery within the cells and the DNA, it has made it increasingly hard to maintain the old hypothesis from Darwin that everything just happens by random when we take into account the time frame of like the available time frame for random mutations. So the book and Stephen Meyer's work in general, kind of, it makes a great case for looking into this and to kind of getting a hold of where there is a mystery and a limitation to the knowledge we have and where to look for new things. And you could also say that since, in this case, we read the two first books first, both the Darwin's Doubt about the Cambrian explosion and then the one before that with the signature of the cell. Those two books are in some ways more convincing in the sense that they give you just the hard science. So when you just study those books and you start to understand both kind of how the body plans of before the Cambrian explosion, kind of the trilobites, like how enormous differences you got so quickly, the facts and kind of the science of the biology in itself makes its own argument. And perhaps even more so if you look into the DNA and how the DNA is copied, and then when you know the structure of the information in the DNA that it is, you have very sophisticated compression techniques. You also have this kind of, it's a coded or like cryptation techniques, that small little enzymes. You take one bit of the DNA sequence as a gene and you run it through one little enzyme, and then you get a different information stream on the bit of the DNA, which is also a functional kind of code for another protein or for some other genetic information. So there's so much packed into the DNA that, and we still don't know. Maybe we only know a little bit of this. So those aspects that Meyer has been laying forth earlier leaves one wondering how this could have happened just by random. So that's the hard science part. So now with his third book and the Return of the God Hypothesis, he's also making the whole cosmological argument. And that's where, especially for the things we've been working on here earlier to kind of look more into some of the basis for like the Big Bang theory and seeing the whole field of cosmology as a very young field. It's full of unknowns. There are big jumps to conclusions. Even the basis of the Big Bang theory is questionable with the redshift that to automatically interpret that as only being the Doppler effect. It could be gravitational effects. It could also be just like the amount of distance that the light travels could be a part of it. And you also have other problems with the age of the universe and this invention of things like the dark matter and the dark energy that nobody knows what is. It has never been seen or detected or constructed. It's only something that is put into the equations to make it work. So with that about cosmology, that part is not a convincing element of the overall argument. But cosmology in general could be an example of our limitations of knowledge and the limitations of the scientific knowledge as of today. So that is kind of the overall first impression of reading the book, that if you want a hard science that can make you think and be stunned by some of the complexities of nature, the first two books are in many ways better. And then the third book has this weakness about cosmology, and it also goes through the whole nature of philosophy of science, but it becomes very kind of encyclopedic in places. And he's running through the usual arguments. But there is a very important point in there, which is that the current impression of this total separation or conflict between science and the spiritual or religion or the mysterious or the divine is an anomaly in the bigger historical context. So we've been working a lot with Dante for several years and looked at the medieval science and the unification of science and literature and theology in the 11th, 12th, 1300s. And all of this was this coherent, harmonious way of looking at the world. And then in Meyer's book, he's also laying out how this was also the case in the beginning of the 1600s with Newton, with Kepler, with Galileo. So this is really important and good examples of how one could always acknowledge that there are things beyond our current knowledge and we don't know what that is. That kind of points more to like an agnostic position as the rational position. And then you could also see that this very strong conflict that is common to perceive that is there came more in the late 1800s, and it is in part perhaps a consequence of enormous progress within the sciences, and then a bit of overconfidence, and then this is a kind of a pendulum that goes through history, because suddenly one can explain much more of the natural world, of the creation of the material world, but then you get a wide kind of array of new discoveries that create all these new questions, and then there's a little bit of humility coming back that we still have new things to learn. Maybe we have to revise our theories. Maybe we have to develop our the models, and also maybe the paradigm that was fully valid in one context. But as the whole context is being kind of enlarged, there are new things to take into account. The classic example of Newton's physics and Einstein's physics So Newton's physics are still valid within a smaller frame or like a smaller context. But then if you go much bigger, then you need the relativity of Einstein. So already you can see when we start talking about the book, it kind of goes a little bit all over the place. But just to look at how the book is sectioned. So the opening is really good. So the prologue is great. The first part, The Rise and Fall of Theistic Science, is a really interesting part. So that part alone can be read and just then you get a new view perhaps of the history of science, of philosophy and theology, and get a little bit adjustment to how it's often seen today as being too much like in conflict. And also this one claim, which is perhaps for many people totally new, which is that some of the Judeo-Christian tradition is in some ways the foundation for the modern science, in the sense that he's making the case here with the Greeks had, like the Greeks worship the Logos in many ways, and Logos is often translated as the word, but Logos is also in a sense the understandableness of the world. It's kind of is the Greek conviction that things can be understood, but also the concept of intelligibility, like you can understand things in itself, is the Logos. So, and then humans are kind of, we are the ones who kind of work through this Logos all the time, that meaning we are discerning and understanding, and we are working on kind of nuancing and refining, like again and again and again, the understanding and kind of trying to grasp the understandableness of the world. So this is in many ways like at the center, at the core of the Greek philosophy and thinking and conviction with the Logos. In the Hebrew tradition, the center is the divine, which in many ways also has intelligibility and knowledge in itself. Like the Ark, like in the center, like the tablets are kind of the moral code or kind of the deepest knowledge about the world. And then you have the cherubims, are kind of these angelic beings for knowledge, the streams of knowledge. They are the one who's protecting the Ark, kind of the heart of the faith. So they're both portals into it and they're protecting it. They were also put into the Garden of Eden, like metaphorically. The forces or the beings that are both protecting and opening the gate into the deepest mysteries with the knowledge. So knowledge is also in the Hebrew very deep, but it is seen as something divine. And it has a creator, and then now we're way into theology, but in some ways the stunning part of the Jewish stories with this covenant is that they came to this point where they said or assumed or claimed that the world is predictable and that the creator is something like is behaving in a way and also not creating kind of like recreating or destroying everything at whims, but it is this agreement, which is in some ways can be seen as a version of this Logos, that there are rules to the creation, to the material cosmos, and to the spiritual cosmos as well, to the extent that we can understand that realm, but it is made with a rational basis. So this is what Meyer is kind of laying at the base here, that for how this created modern science, that understanding this and trying to dig into, if you have a creator that's acting with rationality, then you want to figure out and you want to dig into the specifics of how it was made, instead of thinking that it was made by some eternal logical laws that you can kind of deduce everything. You want to see the specifics of how things were made. So, and then that is again what drove the big figures like Newton and Galileo and Kepler into understanding more of how science and like the scientific explanation of nature and the world and how things were working, like an impetus for the deeper inquiries. So the first part of the book, excellent. And then you get to more of the arguments with the cosmology, biology, also the physics, and then long parts of the philosophical arguments and the refutations and summing up this debate that keeps going over the centuries. So we're just going to jump to the conclusions here now. If you like, the book is highly recommended if this area is new. Does Meyer make the case that the God hypothesis is coming back? We could give it like a maybe and or a maybe plus. It the book makes the case that the kind of closing that door completely seems more questionable now than maybe just 50 years ago, because we see more, there are more mysteries now than it was. That doesn't mean that we're not going to find out why or kind of get more explanations, but at the moment there should be a little bit more humility in terms of the sophistication of both the micro nano level of nature and also the overall kind of cosmic size and context of the whole of the creation or of the universe. So that that part of the argument is a good one, and then how to interpret that, where to conclude from that is more open. And that maybe this could be helpful also, that in the first two books of Stephen Meyer, he doesn't say anything beyond that. He's just making the argument for what to question. In the third book, he's making the argument for like the theological argument. So, and if you follow that or not, that would be kind of more like a personal belief or conviction in many ways. So, but we also would say then that, and then also like, is the book recommended? Absolutely. Should you start with the third book? That's a maybe. If you're more into the scientific, kind of the hard science, we would still recommend the first or the second book more. Maybe the second one with the Darwin's Doubt, because then you get both the DNA part and the Cambrian explosion. If this is known and you want to see more of the arguments, then the third book is also great. It could also be an opener, but it's a little bit high level. So this is kind of where we're ending with the whole evaluation, kind of the review, the rating. So we tried here towards the end to make a little bit of the make some criteria here for the structure of the book. We gave it a 7. It's a little bit all over the place. It's also a little bit encyclopedic in places, but that goes to the nature of what he's trying to do, the scope of it. The clarity of the book, we give it an 8. He is a great writer. It's a little bit uneven. Some, like the flow is a bit uneven in places. Some parts inevitably are a little bit like explanatory, but it goes a little bit out of the general flow of the argument of the book. And then, as we said, his argument in itself, when it comes to the DNA and nanomachine part, we give it a 10 in terms of making the case for the mysteries. The Cambrian explosion, we give it an 8. Cosmology, we give it a 4. Because we don't agree with the basis in, especially the Big Bang theory. So it's also, the Big Bang theory is made by a theologian, by a Catholic priest. So it's a little bit like, there is a reason why the Big Bang theory as a scientific theory fits with the biblical narrative. And it is because it's made by a person who was based in the biblical narrative. So that is an element that should be a part of the assessment of why those two things fit so well together, seemingly. Okay, and then, so overall, we give the book a 7 out of 10. If you read the two first books, we will give it a little bit less, then it will be kind of a 5. Because it doesn't add that much new things, and there's not enough new science in there to write the full book, but it's more like a summary of his work. So it's a good read. If you have read nothing of him, again, start with book 2 rather than book 3. And is it like something you should know about? Absolutely. He's an important figure. He's making a great argument. This whole Discovery Institute are asking good questions. One might disagree with the conclusions, but it could be like a vehicle or a place to open up new questions and areas for research. And it's absolutely a more fruitful place to go on adventure and get inspiration to try to find out new things and discover new science and new theories and a better understanding of the world, and maybe also kind of extraordinary discoveries that can come in the next 50 to 100 years, for example. So I think we're going to stop it there. It's about 20 minutes. And again, we have the same feeling as when we read the book and when we thought about the book, and now going through this in an episode. It's hard to wrap it up fully, but hope there was some input here, some food for thought. And as always, thank you so much for listening, and see you again in another episode.
You may be into punk rock, soft rock, or classic rock, R&B, hip hop, or house, country, techno, or techno country. But no matter what kind of music you listen to, here's something else you should hear. Please consider getting vaccinated. Talk to your pharmacist today about Comirnaty, COVID-19 vaccine mRNA. This message brought to you by BioNTech and Pfizer.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99-cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.